Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melbourne and broadcast through the Community Radio Network. It's always a pleasure to bring you through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and it's a pleasure to welcome you to a new program in the award-winning series of Listen to Older Voices. This is part one of a three-part program featuring the life and times of 79-year-old Charles Palagyi. Charles was born in 1939 in Hungary at the beginning of the Second World War. His father was a very well-educated Hungarian and his mother a German. This did have a potential for problems because a lot of Hungarians had little love for the invading Germans. Charles is very forthright in discussing both the positives and negatives of having a German mother, including how a nurse tried to kill him while he was in hospital due to his Aryan appearance. Charles's stories are a delight to listen to. He's very articulate and his memory is wonderful, and it all means a fascinating, educative and sometimes thrilling story. Stories such as related by Charles give us, the listeners, not only an insight into the storyteller, but remind us of the circumstances, particularly involving war and displaced people, those who came to this country to find a better life and ended up making a wonderful contribution. This is a very pertinent situation that we continue to face with refugees even today. Charles, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me into home. And could I start by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
Rob, thank you for coming here. I was born in Hungary in 1939, at the beginning of the Second World War, in a little place called Kecskemét, which means Goatsville. Not very illustrious town, but yes, of a Hungarian father and a German mother.
That's interesting, because what impact did that have in your family life, do you think?
Well, my dad was a bit embarrassed that he had a German wife in Hungarian society, because although Hungarians, some of them welcomed the German occupation, a lot of them didn't.
Yeah, of course.
And so in the village where we lived, he was always afraid of what might happen to my mother, because she was German, and of course I spoke German as a little toddler, and I ended up in trouble in hospital because of that.
How was that?
Well, I was admitted to hospital as a toddler because of scarlet fever.
Right.
Probably around about 1941, round about there. And my mother would visit me and I'd say to her, "Mum, Mutti" in German, and we'd converse in German. And the story got around that this hospital in Budapest has a little Hitler in one of its wards.
Oh.
Because I had very, very fair hair.
Oh, classic Aryan. Oh,
very Aryan. I spoke German, had a German mum, and a nurse who was looking after me was actually of Polish origin. And, of course, she had heard the news recently how the Germans had devastated some of their villages. So she was intent on getting rid of me.
Wow.
And so one day, in secret, she cooked up a cocktail which she was going to inject into me, when the Hungarian doctor walked into the room and said, "What are you doing?" and stopped her. And then the doctor told my mum what had happened. And so, of course, that's how I got the story from my mum.
Goodness that, me. I mean, you were that close.
I was that close. It was, would have only been a matter of seconds, I imagine.
Can you recall at what age you became aware of the issue of having a German mother and the complexities and complications that was with the Second World War?
Yes, I have a few flashes of memory. I can't remember everything. Two things. The war came to me vividly because we were hiding in the cellar one night in our, I suppose it was a country estate, because we had a huge garden and I had pet rabbits, I and my sister in the backyard. And this night we heard aeroplanes coming over. So my dad got us all into the cellar And in the darkness of the cellar, we looked out, and in the moonlight, we could see these parachutes coming into our backyard. And soldiers running around, you know, quickly packing up their parachutes. And I reckon they must have been Russians on a secret mission. And so my mum said, oh, get away from the window. They'll see us and they'll come into the house,
sure,
you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a very good look, but I did get enough of a look to see that they were hiding their parachutes. So the next morning, we went out early in the morning and dig up their parachutes or whatever they had left behind, but nothing. They must have removed them again, but my white rabbits were gone. And so were my sisters. Oh. And I reckon they took them for rabbit stew.
I would think the end for those rabbits wasn't, yes, was very quick coming.
Yes.
Yeah, indeed.
And the second bit that I remember is, of course, my mum and dad had to enlarge on the story, was that she was a German patriot, even in Hungary, mm-hmm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was rather homesick, and she felt empathy for the German soldiers in a military camp nearby. And so she would bake these lovely cakes because she was a good cook, and send them anonymously via a boy messenger to the officers of the camp,
okay,
with a note, you know, welcome to Hungary, and this is just to remind you of home. So she baked these German cakes, and they loved them, apparently, but they were mystified where these parcels were coming from. And so obviously one day they got the boy to confess. And so these truckloads of officers turned up at our place. And as they got out of the trucks, my dad was looking out the window and he thought, oh, this is terrible. What's happening?
Mm.
But they came in just to thank my mum.
Goodness.
But my father was still afraid that the village will think we're German collaborators.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yes.
So that was the feeling in the village, that Germans were not welcome. They probably resented the military camp. But these weren't soldiers. These were people in uniform, but they were from a dental unit, a military dental unit. And so they became friends. They would drop in with their jeeps and trucks for cups of tea and more cakes.
Goodness.
And this time as guests. And they would dangle me and my sister on their knees, you know, and sing German songs. And so I remember that bit. And, of course, my mum showed us photographs, and that helped to jog my memory.
Now, obviously, you are young, so, and as you mentioned, your memory of those events is hazy.
Mm.
But you did say that your father was concerned that with all these comings and goings of the German officers that you might be seen as collaborators. Were you aware of anybody in the village ever taking that up with your family?
No, we had no trouble. My mum and dad certainly never mentioned any. So, I suppose the village just accepted it, and perhaps my dad was worrying about nothing.
Right.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with Charles Palagy. And Charles is recollecting life as a young boy in German-occupied Hungary during World War II.
The war is on. You're a young boy, but most young boys still have to go to school. Were you able to go to school, or was it shut down, basically?
Well, look, towards the end of the war, and I was still very young, my dad heard about the Russian front approaching and the atrocities that the frontline troops committed in various villages on the way, taking their revenge on Hungarians who were supporting Germans. So he said, it's time to move to Germany to get away from the Russians. Let's go towards the American lines. And so he wrote to Germany, because he had all his degrees from Germany, to transfer his job to a factory in Germany, because he worked for IG Farben, a huge company like ICI or BHP. And so he was transferred to Germany and took us with him to get away from the Russians invading Hungary. And so I ended up in Germany at about the age of 4 or 5. And I remember coming to this huge mansion, because my grandfather in Germany was a Lutheran pastor. And so we lived in his manse in a place called Friedrichroda, hard to pronounce. But my dad would go during the week to his workplace in Bitterfeld to work in the factory. And so, of course, in Germany, there were bombings because the front line was really approaching very closely, and we would often have to run to the air raid shelters, were railway tunnels, because it was a very hilly town like Warburton.
Oh, okay.
And so it had a huge number of railway tunnels. I also read later on that the place where we lived there is where they developed the prototype for the German jet fighter.
Oh, because they could hide in the caves and be relatively safe from bombs.
So obviously, we were prime targets.
Gee, you were prime targets.
Because they thought there would be a lot of military trains hiding in the tunnels. Yes. So the tunnels weren't all that safe either. And one distinct occasion I do remember, Rob, is we were running again for the tunnel, which wasn't too far away from our place. And as we were running along the gravel on the over the sleepers of the tracks, I saw this fighter plane coming towards us from behind. And so we sped up, and in the process I lost my shoe on the rough gravel. And so I jerked my hand out of my father's grip and went back to retrieve my shoe, to the horror of my parents, you know. And the plane started firing shots, but we made it back into the tunnel.
That's straight out of a movie.
Yeah.
You know that, don't you? That's amazing imagery.
Well, for me as a young boy, it was an adventure.
Adventure, of course.
I only saw it as an adventure,
yes,
you know.
Of course.
And we got into the tunnel, and there were a lot of people huddling near the entrance, you know, with their bedding and that. And my dad said, no, we're not staying here, keep going. And so as soon as we had turned the bend in the tunnel, there was a huge explosion from the entrance, because they obviously bombed the entrance. And the detonation and the stench of wet concrete, which is a very powerful smell, it always gives me memories, you know, of wet concrete in Germany. It smelt a bit different to over here. It was very earthy, and it was a distinct stench. Anyway, because of that, our lives were spared, because my dad made sure we were around the corner, so it didn't touch us.
Yes.
But those people at the entrance.
I mean, okay, it's an adventure for you, but that must have been pretty horrific, because you would have had to assuming they must have cleared the entrance and you went out. I mean, that was not a nice scene for a young boy, was it?
Well, you see, we didn't even approach the entrance, because my dad said, look, there's another way out. So we didn't go and look. And he took us through another exit.
Yes.
To go back home. On that occasion, when we got back home, it must have been quite a horrific bombing raid, because we got back to the two-story manse, the Lutheran manse, but every house around us was flattened for quite a long distance, so I could see, and our house was the only one left standing, unscathed, except that our fence was still smouldering.
Oh, I think you could live with that.
Yeah.
Yes.
But on the way, we passed by huge craters in the roads and rubble everywhere. But I never saw any dead bodies. It's something that God protected me from, because that could have given me nightmares
later on.
Because by the time we arrived, and that happened every time, the locals had cleared up the bodies, you know. So I never saw any maimed people or anybody during my entire stay in Germany.
Right.
And that was wonderful. But, of course, I heard about what happened, because when we got back and my mum and dad began to talk to some of the survivors, they were told that the neighbour, who was a baker living right next door to the manse, he and his 11 children got all killed in their cellar because of a direct hit. So there would have been a lot of people, you know, injured and a lot of fatalities. Mm. And I was aware of that, and I remember being on the second story of the manse and looking out, seeing our fence still sort of smouldering and burning, and just surprised at the rubble and the fact that our house wasn't damaged. There wasn't even a cracked window.
Goodness me.
It was amazing.
That is amazing. You mentioned your father. What sort of man was he? And you also mentioned that he had some important work. So what was his line of work?
Well, back in Hungary, he was a director of – he was a chemical engineer.
Oh, okay.
With good qualifications from Germany. So he was a director of a magnesium factory, and magnesium was important for manufacture of aircraft.
Mm.
And so he had no trouble at all finding a job back in Germany, which was amazing in those times to get a transfer that quickly.
Yes.
But he was able to swing that. And
what was he like as a man, though, as a father? Not as a man, as a father. What do you remember?
As a father, well, there are good and bad things that I can remember. Bad things, not in the way that he treated us badly, but I'll tell you later on how he didn't... When I had lots and lots of money back later in Australia, and I'll get back to that story, he didn't teach me about the value of money. I could have helped the family.
Okay.
But he never taught me that. Now, the good thing was that he was very industrious, very keen on me getting an education, and he was a very caring father. You know, he worked very, very hard. And even during his early studies in Germany, where he met my mother, he would often have to decide whether to spend his few pennies on paper to write his notes on at university or whether to buy his own lunch.
Goodness me.
So he was very industrious, very caring for the family, but there were just a few spots that I regret that he didn't teach me, which was a shame. But he was a very, very considerate father, dearly loved my mum and us as a family.
You mentioned mum. What sort of woman was she?
Well, she was, of course, the daughter of a Lutheran pastor. She'd been trained to be a singer and a kindergarten teacher, which she took up in Australia again. She was very, very loving. She had no racial prejudice. She had a lot of Jewish friends, even in Australia. And she was very giving, and hence her baking cakes for the German soldiers.
Of course, of course.
You know. So, yeah, she was very loving.
You mentioned she's a kindergarten teacher. So did your early schooling come through her, or did you still get to school in Germany?
All my schooling really would have come from my mum.
Right.
My dad was too busy during the war to earn a living. The only thing I remember about my mum is that she taught me to appreciate Christmas and Easter, because she loved Christmas decorations. She would decorate Christmas trees, and we would go out into the forest during the bombing raids in Germany, because we saw these waves of planes going towards Dresden. They had to fly overhead.
Oh, okay.
And the American planes were dropping aluminium streamers to foil the German radar system. And so all these long, beautiful streamers would land in the trees, and we'd climb up and collect them as decorations for the Christmas trees.
Of course. So out of war comes something beautiful.
There was.
Yes.
And just one thing that I also remember, going along this forest track, my grandfather took us on a walk. Again, to collect streamers, I presume. And then I saw a beautiful toy tank in the middle of the street. You know, a beautiful tank with treads and everything. Mm. And I rushed to pick it up. My grandfather said, "Don't pick it up, it's booby-trapped."
Listen to older voices. The magic of memories.
Apparently, the Allied planes had dropped booby trap toys. Now, I don't know who did that, but somebody did. And booby trap ballpoint pens, or whatever pens they had in those days. And apparently that my wife, who's Czech-born, said that also happened in Czechoslovakia, that wherever there were German concentrations of troops, there would be mysterious parcels there with booby traps in it.
But that's the sort of thing kids would do exactly what you did. It would be
well,
kids
that's
would
right.
pick them up, not adults.
My wife was going to pick up a parcel, and her dad said, "Don't pick it up."
Goodness me.
You know, and so my grandfather possibly saved my life. I've got no idea whether
because
it was
booby-trapped. We'll never know, that's right.
But who would leave a brand-new toy tank in the middle of a forest path?
No, there's no answer to that one, is there?
So I don't know the truth of that, but when he said booby-trapped, she's a Lutheran pastor, he wouldn't have lied to
me. No. What age were you that you can recall actually going into a formal school then? Because you must have been older than normal children.
After the war, you know, we were sent to various refugee camps where there was no schooling.
Oh.
We ended up in a Russian refugee camp about which my mum and dad don't want to talk.
Understandable.
Must have been unpleasantries there.
Of course.
And I remember the first schooling I had was in the German city of Karlsruhe, where I've got this German Bible from, schoolboy's Bible.
So this, the Bible you've got on the table there.
That's right.
That's the Bible from that period.
That's the Bible. And people at school must have issued, this is post-war Germany now, when I was about 7 or 8 years old, the school children were issued Bibles and they could take them home. And so I used to skip school. I was very naughty. I never liked studying.
Didn't like school.
No, I didn't like school. And especially not having had school up to that stage, I wasn't used to going to school.
Of course.
And I do remember going to school and we'd pinch stuff from the local grocer. You know, they'd huge barrels of sauerkraut outside their stores and we'd just run our finger along the sauerkraut on the way to school. But skipping school, I and my German friend who was of like mind, we'd hide in a big trench out of sight of everybody, skipping school, but we had the Bible with us. So we kept reading it and we would be moved to tears, you know, because of the lovely stories we read in there, especially the healings that Jesus carried out. And that was lovely. So I remember that. And
you were saying only very recently you discovered something quite strange, if not stroke remarkable in there.
There is. This Bible was printed back in the 1800s, 1848 or something. It's in the book. Forgot the exact date. And it's written in old Gothic German script. And there are beautiful woodcut pictures in it. And, you know, I've got a website called creation6000.com, which I've advertised, by the way, in every seniors newspaper and the classified under notices in Australia. And I wrote up my autobiography there and some other articles. And I wanted to scan this page for my website because of the lovely woodcut.
Mm.
And then I was struck that a verse in this little Bible was erased.
Yeah.
Somebody with a heavy pencil or ink tried to erase it, and that caught my attention because I've had this book for a long, long time, and only about 4 months ago or so, seeing this for the very first time, I was interested.
Hmm.
Why would that verse be scribbled out? And anyone with German and Jewish heritage would be interested in this because the verse that was scribbled out said, where Jesus said, and Jesus was a Jewish man himself, Jesus said to this Samaritan woman that salvation is of the Jews.
And that's what's been scrubbed out.
That's what was scrubbed out. And so I can imagine the previous owner didn't want his child to read that.
Right.
And so the parent must have scribbled it out. I'm just guessing, but somebody did.
That's about as logical an explanation as anybody could come up with.
Yeah.
So it was a form of censorship, wasn't it?
Because of the
political situation of the day.
Yeah. I thought it was a highlight for my website, a bit of historical culture.
Indeed. So how long were you and the family in the relocation camp?
Yes, we were sent to various relocation camps. This was after occupation, of course. We lived through a lot of bombings and everything. But anyway, this would have been 1948, I imagine. We were only there for about 6 months. And the International Refugee Organization, who actually put us into this camp, made a very poor choice because they put Hungarians and Poles together.
Oops.
And as I told before, the Polishness was set against any German allies. And the Hungarians and Poles hated each other in this camp, yes. And we were all living in close proximity. And of course, as boys, we formed little gangs.
As boys
do. We'd go and try to rule the rubbish tip where we would find scraps of biscuits and that. And the gangs would form. It was a Hungarian boys gang against a Polish boys gang. And I remember picking up a cracked flower pot and throwing it at close range to this onto the head of this Polish boy, and I cracked his skull open. It was bleeding profusely, and I just got scared and ran away.
Of course.
I got home into our little hut, and my father immediately saw that I was very upset, and he finally forced a confession out of me, and when he heard what I'd done, he stripped my pants off and put me over his knee and started belting me with his hand. Just then, our door was thrust open and this Polish lynch mob, you could say, was at the door. And they were about to rush in and I guess beat all of us up.
Yeah.
But they saw my father in full view, you know, giving me a beating.
Yes.
And so they just stopped and at the doorway and they all looked in and I could see them. They just watched in quietness, absolute quietness, until my father stopped, and then they silently closed the door and disappeared.
They saw justice done.
They saw, and
in their mind.
Yeah, and I was glad because even though I was only eight, I knew what they would have done.
Do join Charles and I next week when Charles tells us in fascinating detail of life after World War II, first under the Russians and then the Americans, and how he and his family came to arrive in Australia, where they found things very different. That's next week, Charles Palaghi on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Community Radio Network.